The walks kind of hurt us. Chris was grinding today a little bit, and you know, you walk two runs in, make a couple errors, it's kind of tough to beat a good team. So still a good series. Obviously didn't end the way we wanted it to today. But yeah, it starts with the mound, you know, for us every day, and walks kind of came back at us.
Blue Jays manager John Schneider, after yesterday's loss to the San Diego Padres. The Jays still taking 2 of 3 from San Diego, just as they took 2 of 3 from the Yankees, just as they took 3 of 4? Did they play 2 games against the Rockies? Anyhow, they had a chance to sweep 3 times, failing in the third game. 6-3 was lost yesterday, Kevin. We talked about this, gosh, all last week, about when you're not scoring a lot of runs, your pitchers have very, very little room to make mistakes. And 9 walks yesterday, 3 for Bassett, 3 for Richards, 3 for Pearson, pretty much did the Jays, and along with a couple of mistakes.
Yeah, it's tough, right? It's tough, right? Whenever your pitching staff allows 4 or less, they're 12-0. When they allow 5 or more, they're 0-10. Like, it's
pretty
real simple.
Easy. Yeah,
it's real simple. I mean, Chris, it seemed to me like Chris was going through some things, right? You know, it seems like the bug, whatever that bug is going through the team. I think there's a bunch of guys that were sick.
If it's a sinusitis or a sinus infection.
Yeah, something was going on. I mean, you could tell just the demeanor walking around the mound and trying to get on the same page.
Yeah.
And, you know, Danny's really good about giving the sign quick enough and setting up soon enough and, you know, giving him a quick enough lane to where he can get on the mound and do whatever it is he needs to do to play some mind games with some people. But whenever, you know, he had, three of the 6 hits came with 2 strikes. So he had 7 at-bats with 6 pitches or more. Like, that's when, right, it's sort of, what was he, he's 12 for 23 throwing strike one. So A lot of the times he was pitching from behind. When he got to 2 strikes, it was just that elimination pitch, right? You know, the sinker command was a little all over the place. The cutter was decent. He could go up with that. He got some key outs when he needed to get key outs. The Bogarts home run, that was a good pitch. I mean, that was a good hitter doing good things. I mean, he's going, you know, he's off to a slow start, but he's still a really good hitter. So, you know, look, it's just sort of whenever you're not feeling right and you're trying to grind your way through and make quality pitches, and, you know, when you don't, you sort of pay for that and you fall behind and you walk some guys. It sort of is what it is. But, yeah, look, it's about winning series, especially when you go on the road. You know, maybe at home you get a bad team on the ropes. You should, you know, be trying to go for the sweep. But it's really hard. It's really hard to sweep a big league team, especially going on the road. Everything has to go right. Like, every part of the game for an entire team has to be on point. And when it's not, right, when you're walking guys, when you're not making plays you're supposed to be making, when you're, you know, situational hitting, it's just every little thing has to go right. And when they don't, you lose a baseball game. But I know John will take 2 out of 3 most of the time, because most of the time that'll get you the playoffs.
Yeah, listen, that's, I mean, winning series is kind of the baseline if you want to be a playoff team. We keep saying, and it is very true. It's just awfully hard to sweep a team. You know, people, and I don't know why it is. Maybe because the pitching's so good, or maybe it's just you know, eventually numbers catch up to you.
Mm-hmm.
But it really is hard to sweep.
Yeah,
a
you
team.
Mentioned,
and we also have to mention that the San Diego. You talked about it last week. San Diego Padres are a good offensive team. Like, at some point, they were going to take advantage of their opportunities.
Yeah, but the pitching staff of the Blue Jays is one of the best in baseball. I think that's what John's trying to say is, you know, sort of they go, we go kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, whenever a guy's on the mound and he's throwing too many pitches per batter and per inning, like, it's just tougher for him to go deeper in a game. And then, you know, you sort of have to use guys because some of the guys they had in the pen were down. And, you know, you mentioned Trevor Richards, right? It's the – we've seen him miss a glove side with the changeup quite a bit. I think sort of setting the sights –
Are you concerned about – I mean, we keep saying it's too early to say – or it's too late to say
I don't say that.
Are you a little confused about what we're seeing from Trevor Richards?
No, not really. No, it's you know, you got 2 pitches. One of them a lot of people can't hit. It's about setting your sights the right place when it's moving that much glove side, because if it's not, it's non-competitive. And even if it's really tough to tell the difference between the fastball and the changeup – You know, when it's non-competitive, that means a ball right out of the hand. A hitter's going to take that. You're going to, you know, have longer counts. The more pitches you throw to a batter, the more they see the changeup, the better chance they either got of taking it or at least trying to put it in play harder. And I just think he needs to set his sights. It's not – the people I've talked to, it's not arm speed. It's not mechanics. It's more of – because it's moving so much because of the grip that he's got, especially glove side, he has to just set his sights and aim in a different spot to keep it in the strike zone, right? When he's really good, it's sort of moving down and away to a righty, down and in – or, excuse me, down and away to a lefty, down and in to a righty. Like, he can make it move, manipulate it to both sides of the plate, and almost sometimes make it look like a split finger. But that's when he is aiming at the right spot because of the movement. Now it's just, if I aim it outer third, that's away to a righty, into a lefty, it's going to be non-competitive out of the hand. The hitter, it's easier for them to take it. So, not really. The Nate Pearson thing – I feel for him, right?
And first time he pitched in 6 days.
Yeah, he threw a pen, I think, in Buffalo, which is when a guy is mentally going where he was at and then sort of, you know, has that many days between outings. It's a tough thing. Sort of everybody's went through that. But, again.
Bigger issue, though, Kevin. Bigger issue. Time between outings or the – disappointment of being sent down to AAA.
Yeah, I think
bigger issue in your mind.
Yeah, I think it's both. Look, this is the big leagues. Like, I feel for him. The Blue Jays don't care. Like, it's about execution. It's about being better with your slider. It's about commanding, you know, outer thirds, upper thirds, lower thirds, not throw balls down the middle. It's sort of that. They will give him a little bit of a, you know, a pat on the back and say it's okay because of the 6 days between. But they know what makes this team run. And it's not the offense. It's the pitching staff. And, you know, it's about getting it done. And it's about execution. And it's about if you're going to throw the slider that much, you got to execute it. You got to pitch ahead. You know, it's just the things you do in game to use your best pitch to its fullest. And when you're not executing it, it sort of looks like this. Again, I feel for him. They won't.
Can you explain to me, though? Because it seemed to me the thing that was really noticeable yesterday was his fastball. It was the lack of velocity in his fastball. He didn't have a lot of confidence in it, clearly. 6 days off shouldn't have that much of an impact on your velo.
Yeah, I think it's more about rhythm and timing or your mechanics, right? When his mechanics are going good, he's not trying to force velocity. You know, he's a scoreboard watcher. He'll throw it, turn around because he felt good or he didn't feel good to see where the velocity's at. He's got a certain number in mind that will tell him that everything's working the way it should be working. And I think that's somewhere in the 99 range, 98, 99. Mm-hmm. Like, he's feeling good. And then you add mechanics and finish and rhythm and timing to all that. And now you can locate it down in a way. You can elevate it when you have to. You know, the slider is tunneling longer. It's breaking later. It's ending up in the zone on the corners more instead of non-competitive because of the mechanics. And then you add on top of it, you got a ton of confidence, which that I think is the 6 days between.
Right.
But again, I get back to that. This is the big leagues. Like, again, they P. Walker and the organization will go, okay, we gave you this one because we had a little something to do with this. And moving forward, there is no more of this. Like, it is a get it done league. And again, they understand how they're going to win games. And it's going to take a good locating, you know, the good execution of the slider for Nate Pearson to stay in the big leagues.
Yeah, and it's particularly important right now because there are no off days for this team now from this point on. They've got, well, not for a while anyhow, but they've got the games in San Diego. Then you go to Kansas City, then you go to L.A. Or then they're home to L.A., right.
Yeah, he's a big deal, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Otherwise, though, 5-1-5-2, starting pitching, Jose Berríos extending his scoreless streak to 21 2/3 innings. Probably not the best we've seen him this year, but I mean, you know, still made pitches when he had to, getting Manny Machado to pop up in the fifth inning with the bases loaded. His ERA is 0.85. That's the lowest through the first five starts in a season in franchise history. He's got how many more starts this month? I mean, he's got a shot at being American League Pitcher of the Month, I would think. Berríos. And Yariel Rodriguez, we saw him on Friday. Four innings pitched, seven strikeouts, three hits, a walk, struck out five of the first 10 batters he faced, did give up a home run on a hanging slider. Was that a step forward from Yariel Rodriguez in your mind? Or is you still need to see more efficiency, I think. But was that a step forward?
I think from the people that I've talked to and what they want to see from him and the expectations going into the season, absolutely. Like, the stuff is there. Like, he can get the middle of the order out with stuff. He can stuff them to death with, which is, you know, exactly, I think, what they want to see from him. It's just refining it and getting it done quicker.
Did you like the splitter? Did you like the splitter?
Yeah. Look, I think it's more about fastball command and sort of controlling arm angles and, you know, just how quality the stuff is, strike one and strike three. Can I have action in three or four pitches instead of five or six pitches? That's the thing. So it doesn't look like it's 83 pitches in four innings. That will look more like 83 through five and a third, that kind of thing, because he has such good stuff. You want to see it more. You want him out there longer. And I just think they, early on at least, Petey's not going to mess with him. Like, he's just going to get out of the way and, you know, let him sort of, you know, go through what he's going through to just sort of get the cobwebs out and you know, find out who he is against big league hitters more than one time through the order, right? You know, you don't have to trick people. His stuff's off the charts. Trickier, you don't have to be there. That's why, you know, they're trying to sort of just refine where the angle's at, right? With two strikes to a righty, he don't have to drop down sidearm to flip something to a guy. Stuff's too good to do that. And then it's non-competitive. And then that means he has to throw more pitches. I think that is sort of, once they get to a final sort of what they want it to look like, it doesn't look that way. Sort of everything looks the same. It's tunneling the same. It's just moving in different directions. It's tougher take for a good hitter in the middle of the order, which will get him deeper in games, which is exactly what they want because this stuff's off the charts.
How much of this do you think is the fact that, for example, he has said that he didn't use his splitter when he was in the bullpen? I mean, in the bullpen, he cut down the number of pitches that he threw. Now he's transitioning back into a starting role. How much of this lack of efficiency do you think simply comes from the fact that he hasn't pitched a great deal in the past couple of years? And when he has pitched, it was out of the bullpen. It wasn't as a starter.
Yeah, I know I got good stuff, right? If I'm going to the mound, I know my stuff's really good. How do I maintain it and have it consistently there as many pitches as I'm going to throw? I think that's where it's at. Split finger's very hard on the arm. It really is. Yes. That's why you hear guys say that when they do have split fingers, they don't throw them off the field. They'll only throw them when they go in between the lines and they're on the mound. Because it's hard on the fingers. It's hard on the arm. It's hard on the forearm. Like, it's just hard on the entire body to sort of be able to consistently throw that thing. So it's going to be a little moody sometimes, right? But he's got really good velocity. For the most part, he throws enough strike ones. He has confidence in secondary stuff to add a little unpredictability to it. It's just sort of refining it. And what do I go to if I got two strikes against a good right-handed hitter? What do I go to in a 1-2 count against a really good left-handed hitter? That, I think, isn't sort of where he's not at. And they just sort of, you know, get out of the way and let him try and figure out on his own. And I think that's why you're seeing as many pitches as you're seeing in the few amount of innings that he's throwing. It's just now sort of the next graduation point is getting him deeper with less pitches because his stuff's so good. And because, quite frankly, I would think they can sort of maneuver their bullpen a little bit easier by not having him throw only four innings and, you know, using a less arm out of the pen and making their team better, and they won more games because of it.
Here's what's on tap for today. Caleb Joseph joins us at 2:35, our Blue Jays Central analyst. We have tickets to give away. You'll want to get these tickets to see the Dodgers and the Blue Jays at the Rogers Center on Friday, Shohei Ohtani's first visit of the year to Toronto. Pat Malacaro is the radio voice of the Buffalo Bisons. He's going to join us. Aurelvis Martinez, just about the hottest thing going right now. He's in a 15-game hitting streak, 6 bombs, 18 RBI, 361 average. He will join us. And Rex Hudler, who I'm sure is going to be quite worked up. He's got a lot to be excited about with this Kansas City Royals team. It's been a while that the Royals have had it going on the way they have it going on now. He'll join us at 3:30. 7:40 is the first pitch tonight on Sportsnet 590. The Fan and Sportsnet. You see Kikuchi taking the mound for the Blue Jays against Brady Singer of the Kansas City Royals. Let's talk about Dalton Varsho, probably continues to be a story for this team.
No question.
Both offensively and defensively.
Yep.
After Saturday's game, what does this mean to you? After Saturday's game, his chase rate is in like the 90th percentile. Last year, it's the 50th percentile. He's chasing less.
Mm-hmm.
He's making good contact. What are you seeing from Dalton Varsho?
Yeah, well,
five home runs in nine games.
Yeah, there's a couple of things. I think on Friday's game when he went 0-for-4 with two punchouts last year, that would have sort of been a trickle down effect to the entire series. We're sort of being able to see him because he has, you know, in such a good spot mentally and mechanically that the 0-for-4s with two punchouts not going to really bother him. So he comes back the next day, he's 3-for-4 with a homer and three RBIs, and then yesterday he was 1-for-3 with the double. Like, you can just tell he's able to separate the bad games quicker, because I just think it is sort of, you've simplified it so much with everything that it goes to being a really good Dalton Varsho, that I think he's just able to walk up there and, you know, I hate to say it, people going to roll their eyes, see ball, hit ball. Like, it's the point where now, you know, you set it, you sort of 60-40. That means 60% of your weight's on your backside, 40% on the front side. And all I want to do is get off the backside and level out my swing and swing at a strike, my strike. That's all I'm trying to do. I'm not going to overthink this thing. I ain't, you know, it doesn't even look like really he's looking for velocity. He's just looking for his strike because now he can, right? And it looks like he's got a better pace. I said this to John when he was on Friday, that pace is a big deal. That tells you that you've eliminated the thought process. I'm not sitting up there thinking about where everything's at, because most hitters are just not good enough to do that. And when you're able to sort of eliminate that part of it, now it's, I see the ball out of the hand, I don't like it because I'm able to see it right away. I take it, I get in better counts to hit, I look for better pitches, it gives me a better chance to hit a ball hard to the pull side in the air. And get, and also, on top of giving Dalton credit, we have to give John credit too. Because of the way your offense is going, when you see a guy like this, because he basically won the game for him on Saturday.
Yes.
He would rather have right now him up there than Kevin Biggio or anybody else. So give John credit, too, that they see it right away. They're quick about making a change. They're quick about putting him in a position to succeed, because that's the manager's job, right, to get the best out of the player. And you just sort of like everything you're seeing, right? I've said this to a lot of people. It's when you're watching a hitter at the plate and they get a good pitch to hit, one that you think they should hammer, and most of the time they're doing it. I think sort of right now that's where Dalton's at. And, you know, they're going to need Dalton. Dalton's doing good things. He's feeling confident. He's an elite defender. He's an elite base runner. It's just now, can he continue to have where, if he does have a bad game, I forget about that. I'm so good mentally and mechanically, and I feel so confident in my bat path that forget about that. And the next day I'm going to show up, I'm going to give you 3-for-4. Maybe I run into one, and I'm going to help this team win a game.
Do you think there's anything at all to the fact that this is a second year here and there might be less pressure on him now? Or do you think there's more pressure on him because the two guys he was traded for both went to the World Series last year, both had pretty good years? Or do you think that's just that's a non-factor?
Yeah, I don't think he cares who he got traded for. I think he cares about where he hits in the order. You know, he plays every day, how his season looked last year, how up and down it was, you know, getting off to a slow start this year. Like, you know, nobody wants to look bad. Like, and, you know, he's made some changes mentally and physically, and now it looks sort of, I think, the way he wants it to look, which in turn just gives himself a chance. Like, now he looks like when he walks to the plate, I walk to the plate, I set it, I'm ready to go, I look hitterish. When's the last time we could say Dalton Varsho looks hitterish? Back-to-back-to-back-to-back-to-back-to-back games.
Often.
It's rare. And I think now you're starting to see that. And if we see it, he obviously sees it because he likes where he's at. And that mentally tells him that now he's capable of doing things that he wants to do to baseballs, especially when he gets his pitch. And again, they're going to need him to do things, right? That lefty bat with power being a threat who can get a giant hit in a big part of the game against a dude that's pitching really well, it's only going to help the Blue Jays win games. So good for him.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at this lineup, it would help the Jays if he can be their impactful left-handed bat.
Not going to hurt.
You know. Tell me a little bit about Vladdy's weekend. Vladdy's what? You dropped this number on me, and I kind of went like, guys, what is he? He's hitting 350 in his last
five games.
And I just kind of, really?
Yeah.
What are you seeing?
Yeah, we talk about Vladdy a lot, right? It's he has front side pull. He's a two-handed finish guy. Consistently, can he not do those two things at the same time, right? He has a two-handed finish because he gets pitched in a lot. It's hard in, soft away. For whatever reason, he feels like, just because he's shown us, he feels like he has to have a two-handed finish to actually be in and out of the zone with your barrel to catch up to whatever they're throwing him in. He feels like that gives him the best chance.
Does that suggest to be able he thinks the swing is slow?
I you'd have to ask him. I have no idea. I just know what I'm seeing and where the ball ends up a lot of the times. It's the out in front of the changeup, the pop-up to center, which is what we saw yesterday, or the ground ball to the pull side because the barrel's in and out, right, with the two-handed finish. Does the 350 excite you? I mean, you'd rather see that closer. It would be awesome if it was 350 with three or four homers, seven or eight RBIs, but it's not, right? It's sort of – it's all of one side, nothing of the other. You'd sort of like those two things to be meshed together and him start driving the ball in the big part of the field. And I think until he sort of changes some things with his lower half and just gets in a more collision part with his swing, I think we're going to see more of the up and down. And a lot of people that watch him are not going to be excited about watching him hit. I think that's sort of where you're at with him. And, you know, again, we talk about it. Dalton Varsho being a big part of this lineup. Vladdy's a big part, too, because of where he hits in the order and guys are getting on in front of him and the at-bats he has with runners in scoring position. Like, they're asking a lot, right? And hopefully, fingers crossed, he can – it looks like he's confident at the plate, which is half the battle. It's just – he looks in between a lot. He's been doing this a long time to be in between this much. Why are you in between? Like, that's the thing I think he needs to answer. Can he answer that question? That is, I think, the biggest question. And if he doesn't, we're going to see some ups and downs, and balls are not being hit as hard as I said this. He's gotten some breaking balls the last 4 or 5 days that he should be hitting to the moon.
Mm-hmm.
Not out of the stadium, to the moon.
Yeah.
And he pops it up to center or to right or to the shorts.
It's almost – you know what the thing you noticed, I think anyhow, with San Diego this weekend, maybe a little bit with the Yankees, but more with San Diego. People aren't afraid to make mistakes. Pitchers aren't afraid to make mistakes with Vladdy at the plate anymore.
Yeah, maybe. I think they see sort of the same thing mechanically in and out a lot of the times. And
like, they'll take a chance on a pitch with him that they may not have in the past. That's what I'm seeing, it's got to make it harder for him to hit.
I think they see front side pull. They know they can speed him up. They can, you know, get away with a decent breaking ball, not a great breaking ball. I think that's sort of where they're at. And, you know,
and they're going to keep doing that until.
All good hitters try and get them away from trying the same thing over and over and over against you. I think that's why he is trying to clear the hips, open up the front side, hit the fastball in to the moon to get them off of it. It's just, when was the last time we've seen him do that? So I think that's sort of where they're at, right? You know, it's just consistently getting the front foot down and having a fluid approach square with the shoulders through the baseball that consistently we don't see a ton. How do you fix it? And is it fixable with what he's doing now?
This is probably an unfair question, but can they score more than 5 runs a game with Vladdy doing this? If this is Vladdy,
it's going to be hard. Where he's sitting in the order and you know, just what they're asking him to do, it will be hard. Again, this is why we started the show with John saying what he said about the pitching. They understand what the pitching means to this team. It's just a lot to ask a pitching staff to do this an entire year in the American League East. Hard. Just sooner than later, the offense is going to have to say, jump on our backs for a little while where you guys are just getting a breather. mm-hmm. where every single pitch doesn't matter. Get back to the stats. Four or less, they're 12-0. When the pitching yeah. staff gives up four or fewer, when they give up five or more, they're 0-10. I mean, it's really cut and dry. It's a lot to ask a pitching staff. And when one of your better hitters is not doing some things, it's just, yeah.
Caleb Joseph is our Blue Jay Central analyst on Sportsnet. Again, 7:40 will be the first pitch tonight as the Jays and Kansas City Royals open a four-game series in Kansas City. Yusei Kikuchi on the mound for the Blue Jays. Brady Singer for the Royals. Caleb Joseph joins us next. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet. A reminder, we'll be doing Blue Jays talk following tonight's game. And later on, we will give away tickets to see the Jays and Dodgers at the Rogers Center on Friday. You have to hang around for that. Let's bring in Caleb Joseph, Blue Jay Central analyst on Sportsnet. Hello, Caleb.
What's new, guys?
I hear birds in the background.
Yeah, I'm outside. I'm doing the Toby Keith song. I just landed back in Nashville this morning. And that Toby Keith song, I'm mowing the grass and I'm painting the fence and I'm
I thought maybe you're on the 14th tee or something like that. Yeah. Someplace,
oh, but. Barker.
I'm Blair. No, that's Barker. Hey, I'm going to ask you the same question I asked Kevin. Hopefully you'll give me the right answer. I'm just kidding. Wow. No, I'm just kidding. Want to look back at Yariel Rodriguez's start. Step forward for you, and what do you think the next step for him would be in terms of efficiency, which seems to be the thing we're all searching for with him right now?
Yep. I think it was a step forward because he was on the road. Friday night, packed house in San Diego, he got into a couple jams, and he was able to work out of them. That's the positive that I take out of it. I love this guy's stuff. I love his demeanor. He looks like a major leaguer. He looks like he's been around for 4, 5, 6 years. Buck alluded to it during the broadcast. He's pitched everywhere. And if you've pitched in Japan, you know, like you can yeah. handle any sort of major league scenario. So I like what he does with the pause in his windup, kind of Japanese style. I like that type of timing disruption. What I would love to see him do is keep the consistent arm angle. Sometimes he likes to drop down, and he starts to get on the side of a couple pitches. They start to flatten out, playing out, and that's when you see guys taking foul balls, and that's when you see him giving up some hits here and there. If he can stay in the same arm slot, his stuff is electric. It is really, really good. It is tight. It is late break. He's got some deception with the windup. I love what he brings. If he can just figure out how to have a consistent arm angle and not worry about tricking everybody, his stuff alone is going to trick them. I don't think he needs to change his arm action and his arm angle. If he can stay there, I think he's going to end up being more efficient.
Caleb, Yusei Kikuchi is throwing harder and throwing more breaking balls. Why do you think him throwing harder helps him throw more breaking balls?
Well, I honestly believe, and I've thought this for a long time, that if you can throw fastballs and get your arm position and your hand position in the right spot, and that fastball is true, and it's in the lane, and it's finishing the way you want it to finish in terms of location and with the zip, that throwing a breaking ball after that has always been really easy. All of the pitchers that I've talked to, when they didn't have their fastball, it was always a battle with the breaking ball as well. When you had a guy locating that fastball, it just seemed like it came right behind it. I love the curveball. I love the curveball that he throws because – it's a yo-yo pitch. It starts to push and pull that hitter, and it really gets them moving more back and forth towards him. We know he's got the slider, the cutter, whatever you want to call it, underneath, down below. But again, that pitch can get up into the 86, 87, 88 mile per hour range. And I love that curveball. It really adds some separation and some depth going down. Another pitch that I love that he's really been throwing is that changeup. Anything moving away soft from a right-handed hitter, now you've got weapons to protect yourself against that fastball when you need it. But this guy's come a long ways. Yeah. When I had him in Seattle, he was 75% cut fastball. What Pete Walker and the pitching lab has done with Yusei Kikuchi is nothing more than a miracle, in my opinion, to get him to throw as many fastballs as consistently as he is. It's really, really fun to watch his development as a Blue Jay.
When you're catching him, he's missing arm side. That's up and away to a righty, up and in to a lefty. What would you run out there and tell him to do to stop doing that?
I tell him, fingers over, thumb under. So fingers over the ball, make sure your thumb is under the ball. If your fingers start getting a little, I'd say on the clock for him, a left-handed hitter, more towards 10 o'clock, and the thumb pointing a little bit more towards 4 o'clock, that's when you're going to get that kind of arm side run. The ball comes out, has a little bit of side spin. I'd tell him to get over it, and I would call fastballs in. I would set up in off the plate, or actually just fastballs to the glove side. Into a right-hander, I'd set up in off the plate. I'd get him to really drive one down, get him to really get over that baseball. And then I feel like once he shows you that, then he's found that hand position. It's going to pick his arm up. It's going to get him better on plane. And then once you see that, then you feel confident about going to the other pitches.
Yeah. You know, Caleb, the other thing, too, you talked about the mix, the fastball-curveball mix. One of the things that I remember hearing from guys with good curveballs in the past is that it helped them correct mechanical flaws in game. Can you elaborate on that a little bit? Just because I guess the way you have to control your arm to throw it, like guys like Pedro Martinez used to talk about if they felt they were in a mess. I'm sorry, Dennis Martinez would talk about if he just felt like his mechanics were a mess, he could throw a couple of curveballs and it kind of got him back on track again.
Yeah, the way you've got to hold that curveball, you've got both fingers on the top of the ball, the pointer and the middle finger on kind of the top of the ball, the thumb's a little bit on the side, and you have really got to get those two fingers kind of releasing towards the catcher, if that makes sense. If they start to get around the ball, the spin is just all over the place. So they grip that curveball, but you know, it's not that their actual nails are facing the catcher. It's almost a bent over, and they're creating a reverse C with their right hand if they're right-handed pitcher, and then they're kind of, it's almost like dumping a glass of water out with that reverse C straight towards the catcher. That's the movement with the hand placement, and it gets them out in front as well. If you release a curveball too far back, it's awful. It's horrible. If you jerk it down too bad, it's going to be bounced. It gets you in that right hand placement. You've got to do a lot of things right to get over the baseball and get out in front, and your mechanics in terms of being stable on the backside. If you start flying with that left shoulder, if you're a right-handed pitcher, it throws the arm angle off. You've got to do a lot of things. Stay over the rubber, get over your front side, and release it out in front. When you can do that and you grab a four-seam fastball, it'll be right behind it.
What are you seeing from Dalton Varsho you've liked last week?
I know people are going to think I'm crazy, but I honestly think he's swinging up more. And people are going to say, what in the world? They've been talking about him getting on top of the fastballs for years. But I'm telling you, when he is steep in his first movement to a ball that is up in the zone, he then has to reroute, which then drops the barrel underneath, and then he's missing below. When he gets a good stretch with the arms, the foot goes forward, the arms go backward, he gets more length in his stretch, and then he drops it into the slot. When that barrel is coming through the zone and it is underneath his left shoulder, he's on plane, and it's going to appear as if he is swinging up. You look at that home run he hit in San Diego down the right field line. He was early, but when you slow-mo it from the side angle, that barrel is coming underneath the left shoulder. It is not a chopping down, swinging. What fools people is the finish. He's coming in at an angle underneath on plane, but when he finishes, and it looks like he's chopping down, but he's not. When he gets on plane and it is going to appear as if it's an uppercut early in the swing, he's doing some damage. And he's been doing it for the last 5 or 6 days. And I wonder if it's a philosophical change. I've seen him leaning back a little bit more, trying to create some more lift. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you, when you start leaning back, that nobody leans back and swings straight down. Like, no, you're swinging on plane. And he's on plane, which means that ball's coming in a downward angle. So he's swinging slightly up. It's not an uppercut. He's on plane. And I feel like that's been the big key for him.
Sometimes you got to look the part. He looks hitterish. Like, you know, that's hard to get when you're, you know, sort of up and down, a lot of peaks and valleys with him, more valleys than peaks. And now he just looks like he's walking the plate and he's not overthinking it. And to that point, you know, you're starting, I think, seeing some of the guys in the order starting to look that way, where they're just not thinking about guiding the ball where they want it to end up. It's, I see it. I put my best swing on it. It ends up where it's supposed to end up. What are you liking or what are you not liking 1 through 9 in the order?
Well, I'm not going to say by any means that I'm worried about Bo Bichette, but he does look a little bit off. And even a couple hits to right field, he seems a little bit jumpy to me. And I wonder if it might be him trying to do a little bit too much early, and it's just kind of snowballed. He hasn't really settled into that very comfortable-looking Bo Bichette. When he's kind of losing the front hip on a breaking ball, that's when you know that something's just not right. And he did that a couple times in the San Diego series. Normally, he just stays on that front side, will not give in, and will foul it off or blister something up the middle. I do like, obviously, what Varsho's done. I like the fact that Ernie Clement and David Schneider come in a platoon role and are producing. Yeah, it is so difficult to do that in the big leagues, to not play every day, have your name called, and actually do something. I mean, goodness, the home run that Ernie Clement hit out,
wow,
is like 5 feet above his, you know, above the strike zone. And that just shows you, like, see ball, hit ball, sometimes Kevin Barker is the best recipe. I promise you, he's sitting one thing. It's heater, and he got it. He put a good swing on it. I do wish that Vladdy would move his contact point out in front. If he is going to be as steep as he is with that bat path, to get that bat on plane, the contact point is going to have to be out in front. I thought it was just an absolute atrocious at-bat in the sixth inning. Third at-bat versus Musgrove. It's his runner at first base. There's a big inning potentially brewing. He takes a first pitch, 91 fastball, center cut, and is late and jams himself, hits it right into the ground. If you're going to go on a first pitch as the Vladdy Guerrero Jr. that everyone expects, that ball had better be absolutely smoked somewhere on time. I'd rather him hit a 500-foot foul ball to the pull side early than be late and indecisive. So there's a mix. There's some good. There's some bad. I still don't think they have really fully reached their potential. Obviously, I'm still trying to figure out what this offense is. Maybe it's an offense that one or two guys really figure it out one night and they carry the team. The next night, two or three others figure it out. Who knows?
You worried about Eric Swanson?
I am, just because of the action of the split. That's kind of the bread and butter. We talk about it with Kevin Gausman quite a bit. In that start, well, in the relief appearance a couple of days ago or yesterday against the Padres, it was flat. It's so inconsistent. I thought he threw a slider to Bogarts, I think it was, and it was a split. It's just not there. And when you don't see kind of that late life and the giddy up on the fastball, now you're really stuck. Where do you go as a catcher? I do feel a lot better about Romano. Romano looks more ready than Swanson, and I don't blame Eric Swanson. He had basically zero spring training and was kind of thrust into that activation with Romano. But I'm always looking at the action of the split. If the action starts to move left to right and starts to look like a floater, that is a BP heater for a major leaguer. That ball's got to go down. It's got to be late. And to see swing and miss at the top of the zone with the fastball will tell you he's getting closer.
Would you at all be concerned that we've seen the best of Nate Pearson, that one 102-mile-an-hour pitch, and that, you know,
no,
6 days later he's brought up and his velocity was down and he didn't look effective?
Yeah, he was not effective at all, and it's too bad. It really is, because he was really on a heater there. I talked to Nate a couple weeks ago, and I just said, what's going on? What's different? He just He just said, I feel like I'm actually figuring it out. And I think a lot of that was repeatability of windup. It sounds so simple, but his ability to repeat his windup and get the pitches where he needs them to go is so important because the stuff is there. It's just, can he locate it? We've been saying this for years now. People don't realize what it does to a player's mind when you get sent down. It just does something. And you can have the best attitude possible saying, it's not going to affect me. I'm going to be a great teammate. I'm going to work hard. I'm going to be back in the big leagues. But it just affects you. If you're Nate Pearson, what are you thinking when you get on a plane the same day that you got to go pitch and you show up, you're not in there, then the next time you're in there, what are you thinking? I've got to be perfect or else they're going to send me down again. And that's just inevitably the mindset of a player when you start riding that shuttle bus back and forth from AAA. It just affects you. And so I hope that he can find a way to get back mentally to knowing that he belongs and not try and do too much. It looked to me in that outing that he was trying to throw 200 miles an hour to really show the organization, I'm here to stay. You can't do that to me again. And then what happens? You lose the kinematic sequence. That's for you, Kevin Barker. Wow. You lose the sequence. Everything starts getting out of whack. You're trying to throw hard, and you end up throwing 5 miles an hour slower, and you have no idea where the ball is. So hopefully he can settle back into that good mental space where he was at before because he was nails.
Caleb, good of you to do this, my friend. Thanks so much. Say hi to the family for us.
See you, buddy.
See you later. Look it up. Kinematic sequence.
You're such a khaki.
Kinematic sequence. Let's look that up quickly.
Well, you're writing it down, too. You are.
Actually. I'm going to look it up. Say something while I look it up.
Well, you know what's funny is Ernie Clement, after the game,
yep.
Somebody asked, how did you hit that around your eyes? And the first thing out of his mouth was, I had an approach. I was looking for a ball up. I was simplifying it that much. I didn't care if it was a breaking ball or a fastball. I was looking up. Sounds pretty simple, doesn't it? Short and quick to the ball, just trying to throw the barrel at a window. I mean, it makes a lot of sense if you simplify it that much because of how good pitching is nowadays.
If you're interested, the kinematic sequence is the study of how energy is transferred first through the large muscles. So I guess you have to have large muscles to have a kinematic sequence, which means I don't have one. Then through the pelvis and thorax.
Mm.
The good old thorax.
Centered.
To the arms and legs.
Yeah. I mean, that would make sense. The reality is with Nate, and I pull for Nate. I know how hard he works and, you know, the ups and downs and sometimes the chances that he's not getting.
You've kind of been that guy.
But look, there ain't too many more of them outings he's going to get.
Yeah.
I mean, it's reality of life. Like, it's again, we know that the way they're going to win baseball games is when you get the ball, you're going to have shut down innings for them to win. And if you're not giving it to them, you ain't going to be in the big leagues.
We talked about once Eric Swanson and Jordan Romano got back up here, how if John Schneider wanted to play it this way, he basically has two separate bullpens.
Yeah.
Right. If he wanted to, he could have two separate. Hell, if you want, you can have Jimmy Garcia close one game, Jordan Romano close the next game. I mean, if you really want to get like that.
Mm-hmm.
The inconsistency from Trevor Richards and from Nate Pearson, and maybe to a certain degree, I don't know, Yenesis Cabrera recently, I shouldn't say inconsistency, but that's kind of preventing them from using the bullpen the way John Schneider really wants to use them.
I don't think so.
Right,
they're
going
to go to Trevor. Like, Trevor, for me, is just aiming point. Like, where does he want to start the changeup? If he starts it where he wants to start it, I've stood behind that thing. You just can't pick it up. Like, you can't tell the difference. It's just about making it look like a strike and getting enough called strikes on it to get a hitter in swing mode. If he just gets back to that again, it's not arm speed. It's not mechanics. It's just about changing the eye slot to where you want to start the changeup. If he sort of controls that, gets back to that, he will get him in swing mode enough to just be confident in when he goes to the mound that he can get a lefty or a righty out. I think they feel confident enough in their pen. I don't know if they know where Eric Swanson's at just because the stuff just doesn't look there. Like, it just looks like it's roly-poly. Like, when it's roly-poly and it's coming out of the fingers. And
as Caleb said, I mean, you look at this guy's spring training, the accident involving his son, the injury, he has not had a – I don't even know if you – if you could say he's had a spring training.
Yeah, I don't know if I look veteran guys. I don't know how much spring they need. I mean, I'm sure if you walk up to him, he's not going to use that as an excuse. He just hasn't been good. Like, you expect your veteran guys who've been around a long time to figure it out, fix it quicker. Why is he not fixing it? Like, this is a couple times outings now that we're just the split finger's not real good. And if you're John with the lead, you giving him the ball?
I mean,
you just don't feel confident. Just in those stats, 4 or less, they're 12-0. 5 or more, they're 0-10. Like, just knowing that if you're John and knowing that you got a lead and what that scoreboard's telling you, you're going to hand the ball to Eric Swanson. I just every game matters now. So, you know, I think they – whatever that is, and, you know, do they know what it is? I'm sure they do. You know, what it's supposed to look like and how crisp everything looks coming off the fingers and – you know, how his routine should look off the field, what will tell them and give them confidence to use him in big spots. Maybe you use him in the sixth inning and not after that until he starts showing you to where if he does give it up, at least you got a chance of maybe making up for it after that. I mean, they're going to give him the ball, it looks like. Just when? How much? To who? Like, ready to give it to him, bottom of the order, meat of the order, 5-6-7, do you feel confident? 8-9-1. I feel more confident 8-9-1 than I would 4-5-6 right now. So I think they're going to be careful. They got other guys they can use down there that they feel like are predictable. Just right now, he's not. And when he's not predictable, how do you use him, especially with what your team's not doing?
You guys had an interesting discussion about Ernie Clement. Do you think his approach would work? Or do you think his approach is good enough to potentially make him an everyday player?
I think everyday.
Or is it best served?
I think everyday
coming
strong.
Off the bench.
Like, you know, what would he look like if he's getting a bunch of breaking balls? Like when he faces starters, like Brady Singer throws a slider 46% of the time, and then he's sprinkling in the sinker and the four seamer and an odd changeup. Like when he's doing that, can he go up and have that approach that he had in his last game, where I'm just looking up? I don't care what the pitch is. Because I'm facing a guy that throws 91. Now, Singer throws 91, too. He's 91, 93 guy. But when he's facing them dudes where he's really got to get it going because they throw really, really hard. And now that will force him to chase the secondary stuff. Then it's a little tougher than how it looked. I don't think they have to.
Like,
they
no, got I'm enough, just wondering
they
if
they got
that...
enough guys that will give them enough at-bats, that quality at-bats, that you can fill in the blanks with the Ernie Clements, the Davis Schneiders, the Kevin Biscios of the world. They can make up for it.
It's pretty nice right now with, you know, again, we know that Cavan was under the weather in this road trip. But when you look at those three guys right now, and Isaiah Kiner-Falefa and the way John has maneuvered them around, you know, look, it's easy to pick out things the manager does when they don't work out. But in terms of maneuvering these guys around, I think John may have more say in that than a lot of other things he has a say in, and he's done a really good job in terms of, you know, getting guys in a position to do what they do well.
Yeah, I've been told the khakis just give the information that they ain't solidifying the outcome. So I will, every time John makes out a lineup, I'll give John credit one way or the other. So we're going to start doing that. Like, I think where this organization's at, they live and they learn,
especially
right?
Especially with those four guys.
I think so, right? It's sort of, I think every one of them guys sort of will tell you when they are going to be playing, right? David Schneider likes the ball down. You got a guy that will throw a breaking ball down, is not a hard thrower, that he can get away with, right? Upper third instead of up at 96. That's a big difference. You know, 91, 92 upper third is different than 96, 97, 98 upper third.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of that opposing pitcher is dictating how John is going to use every single guy. But I think, again, you got to, if you're a player, you sort of force the hand of the manager, right? You give him a reason to put you in the game against a certain player or against a certain pitcher so you're at your best. And, give everybody credit. David Schneider, when he's getting his chances, boy, he's getting it down and getting it sinking. Can't argue that, right? For me, he's made an adjustment. He's taller through his swing. When you're taller, gives you a better chance of hitting the ball hard to the pool side in the air, which forces that manager's hand, which you play more. Good for all those guys.
I've got Jays and Dodgers tickets to give away at the top of the hour. We've got Rex Hudler joining us as well. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet.
breaking down the top stories in the NHL every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Swear to God. The stuff that goes on in the background of this show. I wonder if other shows have the same problems we have.
It's not really a problem. Everybody annoys you.
It's Blair and Barker.
Don't let it beat you.
That's true.
It is. 7:40 will be the first pitch tonight. The Jays and the Kansas City Royals open a four-game series. The Royals are 13-9 so far this year. And shut out for the first time yesterday by the Baltimore Orioles.
Yeah, they're second in baseball and quality starts with 12.
Yeah.
I think that's the surprising part of that, right? Is, you know, I think they thought they were okay with the pitching. Mm-hmm. I think they've gotten off to a little bit better start. And their three best hitters are their three best hitters. They're doing things.
Yeah, Salvador Perez is having a terrific start.
Absolutely.
Singer, Wacom, Marsh, Cole Reagans will be the starting pitchers for the Royals. Reagans will be against Berríos on Thursday afternoon, which would be a terrific pitching matchup. Kikuchi against Singer, Gossman against Waka, Rodriguez against Marsh, and then Berríos against Reagans on Thursday. And the Jays are home to take on the LA Dodgers. Speaking of which, we will give you past, present, future, the chance to win Blue Jays tickets all season long here in Blair and Barker. All you have to do is text the correct answer to our daily baseball trivia question to 590-590. Now, our last question and answer was, last season this Yankee became the fourth pitcher in franchise history to pitch a perfect game. Name him. The answer was Domingo Germán. Today's question is to win tickets to see the Jays and Dodgers this week at the Rogers Center on April 26th. So you might want to listen to this. Do worse than going and seeing the Dodgers and Jays on April 26th. You can give Shohei Ohtani a warm Toronto welcome.
Yep.
How do you think the reaction will be? Well, let's the reaction will be like. Let me just get this question out of the way. Prospect Nick Frasso was part of the package to send which pitcher to the Blue Jays in a 2022 deadline deal?
Ooh.
Again, prospect Nick Frasso was part of the package to send which pitcher to the Blue Jays in a 2022 deadline deal? Text the answer to 590-590 for your shot to win. See rules at sportsnet.ca/590.
What do you want the reaction to be?
What do I want it to be?
Yeah.
I want him to boo his ass.
Why?
Just because.
You think he cares?
No.
Yeah, I don't either.
I think it would be cathartic for, is that the word? Not cathartic.
Boo this man!
I think it would be, it would be a good release valve for Blue Jays fans to boo Ohtani.
Huh. I don't think it's his fault.
It's not his fault, but I mean, you know.
I mean, you were in the running.
I don't know what the reaction will be. You know what? Maybe when we do the back leg line on Friday, we'll ask people.
Yeah.
Going to the game. What's your reaction to Ohtani?
Mm.
You could do the whole thing or nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. Just like when he comes up, do nothing. Don't do anything. Don't boo. Don't cheer. Don't do anything. Mm. It's like, we don't care about you.
Root for your team.
I don't know. Mm. A little hatred's not a bad thing. A little hatred goes a long way.
Mm.
But you're right. He won't be affected.
No, he could care less.
No. You can bet that he won't be affected by
it. Oh, good one. Boy, you've waited for like 3 minutes. Took you long enough, didn't
it? I'm just going to go now. I'm done for the day.
Took you long enough. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I should.
Why?
Well, somebody had to say it.
No, it wasn't going to be me.
I know it wouldn't be you.
I'm so Mr. Positive today.
You are Mr. Positive today.
Yeah. It's hard sometimes, boy.
Well.
Yeah.
You know.
We're trying.
Rex Hubler, speaking of positivity, he'll join us at 3:30. How excited do you think Rex will be about
Pumped.
This team?
Oh, he should be. They haven't been real good lately. And, you know, you
Bobby Witt Jr.'s.
Well, yeah. You know, I think they got something to build around.
Yeah.
Salvador Perez, like, you know, the catcher and the driving and runs and the hitting homers. And, you know, you can stick that in the middle of the order. And just, you know, the presence of him at standing everywhere he stands. Like, it's just, I mean, they got some good things happening there. Now, will it continue? Who knows? But, you know, sometimes you'd rather get off to that good start and build some energy and some momentum heading the right direction. And maybe that's an easier way to get some free agents there, right?
Sal Perez, to me, is one of those guys that I kind of wish – you know, there are visiting players that you kind of wish you could spend a lot of time with just to see what they're like. I mean, I did an interview one time when the Red Sox were in town with Jason Veritek for, I don't know, about half an hour. We were talking about it. It was when he was working with – it was about how a catcher works with pitchers from different cultures because they'd had so many, right, on the Red Sox. And he was just – I've always liked Jason Veritek. I've enjoyed watching him play. He was a terrific interview. Same thing with Sal Perez. I mean, John Gibbons, when he was in Kansas City, you want to get John Gibbons going about something, get him going about Sal Perez.
Yeah, I asked
and
Caleb,
just stand back, because half an hour later, he's still going about Sal Perez.
Yeah, I asked Caleb about what would he tell you, say, about the arm side run, right? When you ran out there, what would you ask him? It's just whenever you watch Salvador Perez and just how he handles – every guy that's standing on the mound, right? It's just sometimes he doesn't even do anything. He just stands there and looks at him.
He's so freaking and sort of big. He's so big.
Sometimes you got to let them figure it out on their own, right? Yeah. Especially when you're dealing with youth. And it's not always you being the father figure. It's just sometimes you going, you know what you did wrong. Mm-hmm. I don't need to tell you. And that's sometimes the hardest thing for, you know, especially young players who are trying to get paid and establish themselves and become and stay a big leaguer, is they have to figure it out on their own. And just, boy, they had a home run with that. Like, just everything he is as a person and as an offensive player, defensive player, it's pretty fun to watch.
Yeah, no, it'll be. I'm looking forward to this series. I think the Royals are one of the teams at the start of the year that I was really in. I mean, I've talked about Bobby Witt Jr. I love watching Bobby Witt Jr. play. But they were one of the teams I was intrigued with, because if you go back and look at their offseason, they quietly did a nice job of addressing issues without breaking the bank, without blocking any of their guys that are coming up.
Well, they gave their best player a lot of money, and then they're talking about moving, you know, getting a new stadium. Like, you got to sort of, those two things go hand in hand, right? And you can't just sit pat. You got to sort of add pieces to be a little bit better and get people involved and intrigued and can't wait to go watch the Royals play. And yeah, you know, maybe they're doing that. I know Bobby Witt Jr. is a lot of fun to watch. He's sort of a five-tool guy, right? It's he's raw. And being raw and this good at the same time, man, that's a lot to look forward to.
So we're going to be joined in a few minutes by Pat Malacaro, who does a terrific job calling Buffalo Bisons game. The Bisons, Kevin Barker, Relvis Martinez, turned into a bit of a story. 6-for-18 this year so far. He's got an OPS of 1.073. He's got a 361 average. You know, we've talked about this minor league, this minor league system, and we've, I think we've kind of had the sense that, and again, this is based a lot on the minor league rankings that we see, and you have to take all of them with a grain of salt. But the fact of the matter is, people do put thought into them. They do talk to other, you know, personnel people from different teams, and you do get a read on what people think of the Jays minor league system. And quite frankly, you really got the impression that people were pretty cool in the Jays minor league system. I think it was around 21st, 22nd, 23rd. Mm-hmm. But given where the Jays are right now with Vladdy and Bo, I mean, if Relvis Martinez and to a certain degree as well, Addison Barger can push the envelope a little bit this year, that gives the Jays some very It gives them some interesting options going into the offseason.
Yeah, it's intriguing, too, the positions they play, right? I mean, there's some openings there at the big league level.
Sure.
I think it's north and south velocity with both of those guys. When you start watching Arelvis, and I went back and watched the video, and just watching him get on top of high velocity, that's a big deal, right? Watching him, you know, drop the head on some low velocities, which is a big deal, right? Getting that in the air to up the middle to the pool side, that'll tell you that mechanically and mentally – he's ready to go, and laying off some good strike-to-ball breaking stuff from a right-handed pitcher, and sort of vice versa when you're talking about the lefties. That for me is, I guess, you know, if you're an organization, what do those two guys have to do to get called up? That's the thing.
That is.
I don't even know what it is. Would you know what it is? I have no idea.
Maybe. I mean, I've thought that Addison Barge is probably the closest, just because he's a lefty hitter. But I'm looking at this team right now. I mean, who?
I think it's up for grabs. I mean, whoever's hitting homers and can drive in runs and can hit velocity to the pool side, take either one of them.
Let's bring in the radio voice of the Buffalo Bisons, Pat Malacaro. Pat, thanks so much for joining us on Blair and Barker today. We were just talking a little bit about Aurelvis Martinez and Addison Barger, and just looking at Addison's numbers, 3 home runs, 21 ribbies, 15 strikeouts, 14 walks. But he's got an OPS of 1.021, which is not that far removed from Aurelvis Martinez. Look, you saw these guys last year. You've seen them this year as well. What's the difference? And as Buck Martinez and Kevin both pointed out, it's still cold. Like these guys are playing in cold weather. It's not been warm.
Yeah, especially when we were in Columbus last weekend when the temperatures were basically the same as they were in Buffalo. I think the difference for Addison, at least maybe the separator for him from other players right now, is his ability to play multiple positions and his ease of going to right field. And that's the transition we saw a little bit last year in August. And in one of his first games, the Bisons were in Syracuse. He went back to the wall, pulled back a home run, and was maybe his second or third ever game in right field. So I think for Addison, just him being a natural athlete is maybe his biggest asset and what adds to his offensive skill that is already there. And he hit a prolific home run in the series against Columbus. Besides what Aurelvis did at the plate, I think for Addison at the plate and defensively, he maybe has more options because of his ability to play right field than maybe some other players that you may look at.
Pat, I was wondering, and Jeff asked me, you know, what would they have to do to be called up? I don't really know the answer to that. With what they have in front of them, it's just you wonder what they would have to do in the minor leagues to be called up. And I think my question would be, and a lot of fans that might come and watch these two guys in the minor leagues, what is sort of what they have to work on offensively? Defensively, run prevention is a big thing, as you well know at the big league level here.
Especially for this team.
Absolutely. I think they're looking for more of thump and offensively. Is there something that, you know, you could point your finger at with both guys that maybe is a work in progress offensively?
I think it's something that all young players deal with at some point in their careers, is that to really hone in and the pitch selection. I think that's one thing Aurelvis has done well, but you saw at times in the series against Columbus when pitchers started to figure out he would chase sliders away. They would keep going double, triple, even go to 4 times in a row, and you'd be able to get him to chase for a strikeout. His ability to adjust would then, you know, a few at-bats later, allow him to come back and force the pitcher to come in the zone and him hit a home run. But I think that is really the biggest thing, is probably for both players and most young players in general. I mean, both those players in their early 20s still, and that's one thing I always have to remind myself of, is they have relatively few at-bats here at the AAA level. So just kind of refining the strike zone, because I think that another thing that the Blue Jays do really well, and we see it at the minor league level and it doesn't translate to the big leagues yet. You saw it last year with David Schneider, and you saw it with Spencer Horwitz. Pitch selection. If guys know at this level with the full ABS or the challenge system and being able to challenge what you think is a bad call, if you have a really good eye at the plate, you're going to get good pitches to hit. So laying off the ones that are out of the zone, or being able to recognize what is a good pitch to hit and which ones you want to just waste away or maybe fight off to see another pitch, is something that these guys will continually work on to get them ready for the next level.
That's really interesting, because it almost seems to me as if you're saying that in some ways the ABS system at the minor league level, it's almost a teaching aid. It's almost like a real-time in-game teaching aid for players.
I think that's a really good way to put it. And you look at Davis Schneider, Spencer Horwitz last year, Rafael Antigua is a player, real scrappy player in Buffalo. The thing they have in common is they're not the biggest guys in the world. And if you were a smaller guy, and I'm talking like under 6 feet, and you really figured out pitchers have to throw you strikes, you're at an advantage as a hitter. So making sure you hit your pitch, first of all, that is one separator for all three of those players, and especially for Aurelvis this year and Addison Barger. Being able to hit the pitch, but also just making sure that you know that you're going to get some good pitches hit, because pitchers at this level are going to have to throw you pitches in the zone that maybe at the big league level right now are not called strikes, but at this level, you know they're going to be.
Pat, you think that ball up with the automated strike zone helps? Like it would tell you that, you know, there's a certain spot that you don't have to go above. You're actually seeing that play out. That's helping, you know, especially, say, a left-handed hitter that may have trouble with the little natural uppercut. We see that all the time, you know, at the big league level. Guys are trying to get in the big leagues. They've adjusted what they're trying to do with certain balls, right? You get the ball in the air to the pull side, you're noticed. If you don't hit the ball on the ground, it's a little harder to be noticed. But you're seeing that actually play out and help hitters now because of the ball up.
I do, and I think it's still an imperfect system that hitters are figuring their way through, and it's being refined and perfected. But I do think it is a good teaching tool in game, and even after a game, to be able to go back and almost immediately be able to see if the pitch was a strike or how close to the zone it was. You know, if maybe you're guessing on the pitch, and you know what you might have seen leading up to that one, that really helps the hitters too. So I think, yeah, definitely you're seeing at this level at AAA that it's being used as an advantage for a hitter, and a very disadvantage, puts pitchers at a big disadvantage.
Pat, 2 years down the road, Aurelvis Martinez is in the majors. What position is he playing?
Second base. I think that is his position, and not just because of who's in front of him in the big leagues in Toronto, but I do think as the Bisons have a very stacked prospect lineup, their best lineup any day is Aurelvis Martinez at second, Leo Jimenez at short, and Damiano Parmigiani at third. And those three prospects really have played well together, and especially Parmigiani and Leo together, you know, more so the last year or so. But I think that is the best position for Aurelvis, and he's getting his most work at second base, and you're seeing him really settle into that position nicely.
Why would you say that? Arm strength? Is it accuracy? Is it first move? Is it just he's more comfortable? You know, they want him to think more about hitting than to do on the defensive side. Why do you say that?
Yeah, he looks a little more comfortable at second base, and I do think the arm angle that he throws the ball at is makes it easier for him, or puts him at more of an advantage at second base than opposed to shortstop. I think that's the one thing, and maybe that's something you can work out of a young player and get him through a routine every day, and something that, you know, Casey Cannondale and the coaching staff do work with him on is, you know, the accuracy of the throws from short or second. But I think his ability at second base, probably with the arm angle that he throws at, it would lend to less prone to errors maybe at that second base position than short.
Pat, what difference did you see in Alek Manoah his last start?
His slider has been very good, and that's, you know, that pitch has to be on for him to be successful. And the velocity started to kick back up a little bit. He got into trouble at times, and Columbus is a hitter-friendly park. He managed his way out of a couple of situations, going up almost around almost 90 pitches, I think it was, in that start. So I think for him, just making sure the stuff is there and that the slider, when he needs it, is that dominant wipeout pitch. And we're starting to see it come back. We saw it in his first appearance with Buffalo, and definitely got a lot more swings and misses on it against Columbus last weekend.
Pat, how about sinker command arm side? That's into a righty. That's a big deal for him, right? It's uncomfortable in there if you're locating it and getting called strikes. Did you see any of that from him?
Yeah, as you're talking, trying to think back to the start, and I think definitely the sinker was more, it was more pronounced, this appearance, and maybe that was one thing working on more so than his other outings. You definitely threw more sinkers, at least, you know, to my memory recollection. So that is definitely another aspect of his game that was starting to come around in that start.
Yeah.
Pat, really good of you to join us, man.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Always appreciate it. Thanks,
good
guys.
See you.
Take care. Pat Malacaro does a terrific job, the radio voice of the Bisons. By the way, I did want to point this out, because the Bisons are a bit of a, well, they've got some, they got some of your prospects there. They're a pretty good team. They've got now through May 31st, let me just double check, they're accepting Canadian dollar at par for single game tickets. Let me just check the Bison's website. Someone sent me a text in the middle of the
show. Very
cool. So yeah, now through May 31st,
yeah.
Canadian dollars accepted apart. Hey,
that's,
if you want to go down
awesome.
See Aurelius Martinez and Addison Barger,
you should
have at it. I can tell you, I mean, having gone to Bison's games, it's a fun experience.
I joke about the weather, but when it warms up there, it's a beautiful place to go watch a game.
Oh,
I mean, I used to love it there. Ball carried. It was just those couple of months when it was really cold that it was a dread. Boy, you just couldn't go outside there, and it's you trying to hit on top of it. I find it interesting about the Aurelius Martinez playing second. Like the arm angles, the positioning, the first moves, the arm strength, all the things that would go into, I think, just sort of separating it and him being the best offensive player he can possibly. I find it interesting. They just sort of, they come to the realization, it's that or DH. It ain't anywhere. Like, it ain't, mm-hmm. they ain't going to put him at third. They ain't going to put him at short. Yeah, it's just a lot to ask, right? A young 22-year-old to try and figure out all of that and be the best hitter you can be. I'm sure they're putting a lot of work into that side of the ball where he will be a big leaguer when he's ready offensively. I think if he's not there ready defensively,
you can
sort of massage that and, you know, position him and catch the ball right at you. You're all right as long as you're hitting.
Well, and let's be clear. I mean, there is, you know, there's a path forward here next year. You could put Dalton Varsho. If these guys are knocking at the door, you could put Varsho in center. You could have Aurelius Martinez in left field if you wanted.
I guess.
I don't know. Now, the thing with Barger I find really interesting, Buck pointed this out two spring trainings ago. He had seen, I believe he'd seen Barger taking balls in right field or something like that and was talking about his arm. His arm is a weapon from right field.
Yeah, I know what I look for when I look down there. Dudes are hitting homers. Like, they just don't have a ton of those at the big league level right now doing that. And if you are a game changer and you could hit a three-run homer, you know, every third or fourth game, like,
six homers when it's cold is pretty.
Oh, that's a lot, right? And, you know, I think that north and south hitting the homer against velocity is a big deal. I saw he hit a breaking ball, you know, a couple of times for homers, which is a big deal too, right? Like, you're starting to hit the velocity the way you're supposed to be hitting it. You can do it to right center. You can do it to the pull side. You know, that will force you to lay off some breaking stuff. Yeah, you just sort of like that, right? You like guys that can hit homers. Mm-hmm. They need it. And if you're at the minor league level and you're thinking to yourself, how can I impress, that would probably be a good place to start. Start hitting some homers, and they'll start noticing, and maybe you'll get called up center.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's, look, I mean, we're going to go down this road every day, but we're 2 years away from this team having some pretty big shoes to fill, some pretty big openings to fill.
Yeah.
And one of these guys, I would think, Aurelius Martinez is going to be asked to fill one of those.
You would think so. Shoes. Yep.
You know, I think Addison Barger's probably, he's going to get his chances, but I think the expectations for Aurelius Martinez are a little, Aurelius Martinez is only 22 years old too. Now Barger's 24, but 2 years, there's a big difference between 22 and 24. But yeah, it's certainly, hey, look, compared to what we were talking about last year with this minor league team, all you can do when you're AAA is be better than you were last year.
Yeah, I don't think I don't think at the minor league level they can teach power, but I think they can teach guys, you know, how to lay off a certain thing in certain counts.
The balls and strikes thing, your question was particularly interesting because of the high pitch and the high strike.
Yeah, because a lot of the Blue Jays at this level, you know, sometimes, not all the time. I mean, they're starting to work on it enough that.
But that could be almost a bad thing, couldn't it be? If you go from AAA where you've got ABS, so you know where the high strike, and now you come up to the majors where you've got you-know-who, Hernandez behind the plate, the high strike is up here.
Well, you know, the beauty of it is, I think it's sort of getting to the realization that you can't hit it all the time. But I can be better at laying off of it most of the time. Maybe that's sort of what it's forcing them into, is they sort of know where their sweet spot's at. At the big league level, do you really know what it is?
Depends where the umpire wants to
unless you just consistently see it there all the time and you sort of know what you are trying not to swing at. So, yeah, I think that's intriguing. You know, you can't cover everything. I think that's what the realization is. And the sooner you realize that, the better player you're going to be and the more homers you hit. And I think that's the most important part of it.
Rex Hudler is the Royals TV analyst. You'll join us next. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.
The most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan and Sportsnet. 7:40 will be the first pitch tonight as the Jays and the Kansas City Royals start a four-game series. I'm trying to say, I don't think we have the lineups yet, right? We're an hour away, or there's an hour time difference. Just interested in seeing, given all this sinus issue, if there's any lineup changes for the Blue Jays. The sinuses, man, that's bad.
Yeah.
It's weird, you know, that I was thinking about this because quite often, I know your experiences, but it seems to me, I can remember, maybe it's because it's the, it's just such, it's a longer flight. It always seems to me that if something's going to break out in your team, quite often happens when you're on the West Coast, if you're coming from the East, because basically you've been in the air for five and a half hours in your sleep patterns.
I tried to remember if I'd ever been on a team where I had something like that. I don't ever remember. I played 16 years everywhere in the world. I never remember an entire team getting sick at the same time. I just never remember that. I played forever in winter ball. I never remember that.
Yeah, you see it. You see it a lot with influenza and that now.
Yeah,
with the flu.
Huh?
And I don't. You know.
Yeah, I don't know. It's too bad because it sounded like that Bassett yesterday was having some issues. You know, trying to get through it and work through it and walking around the mound and just everything. Energy level was a little down, right?
Yeah.
He needs everything to have all that stuff work.
Absolutely. Yep. Well, so we mentioned the Jays and Kansas City Royals start a four-game series tonight at Kauffman Stadium. The Royals are 13-9, just coming off their first shutout loss of the year. They were beaten 5-0, pardon me, 5-0 to the Orioles, and 5-0 beaten 5-0 by the Orioles. It was Seth Lugo taking the loss. There's some good pitching matchups for this series. You've got Yusei Kikuchi against Brady Singer, Kevin Gausman against Michael Wacha, Alec Marsh and Yariel Rodriguez. And then Thursday, a 2:10 first pitch. This will be pretty good. Cole Reagans against Jose Berrios. Rex Hudler is one of our favorites. He is a Royals TV analyst, and he joins us on Blair and Barker. Mr. Hudler, as always, I know you're doing well. Because you always bring the energy when we talk about the Royals. I want to tell you, we had Dan O'Dowd on last week, and we were talking about giving contracts to younger players, and specifically we were talking about Bobby Witt and then talking about what the Jays didn't do with Bo Bichette and Vladdy Jr. He made an interesting comment about Bobby Witt. He said, Bobby Witt is the type of guy I would think the contract would probably create more freedom for him than it would raise expectations. It seems to be the point, doesn't it? That it certainly doesn't appear to have impacted Bobby Witt in a negative way at all.
Fellas, great to be with you. Hey, now, we got action. The Blue Jays are coming to town, and it's a different Royals team. But I got to agree with O'Dowd. He's playing with a sense of freedom. I know, heck, I never signed anything even close to that, but I signed a free agent deal my only time in my career, and I felt immense pressure on how to, you know, back up to that performance. But Junior, he's so free and easy. He loves playing baseball. He has taken the captain Salvador Perez's personality, which is a good thing. There's one player right there, Salvador Perez, 33 years old. He's won everything you can win as a baseball player. But he has that love of the game and the energy that's passed on to Bobby Witt Jr. And now Jr. is the next leader, the next captain coming. And all he wants to do and all he talks about is winning a championship. And by golly, the Royals organization went out in the offseason. They said, we're going to do something about that. We're going to bring in some veteran pitching to go along with some of these other young, talented players we have. And so far, so good. I mean, you know, it's early in the season. Nobody's doing cartwheels here, but it is a much better team and more fun to watch. But Bobby Witt Jr. is a freak. He's a generational player. You hear that term a lot in the modern game now, but he truly is a freak. He's a six-tool guy. He's got all the five, but the six-tool is that baseball mentality, the IQ that you can't teach. He doesn't try to go for three. You know, when his team's down, he stays at second base. He won't advance to a base. He's a great base runner if the situation doesn't call for it. That's highly unusual. Most young players have to spend 4, 5, 6 years in the minor leagues to learn how to play the game at the big league level. But Junior hasn't. He's in his third year, and he's just all about go, hit, and run. It's so fun to watch this young talent.
Is there a next step? Is there offensively, you know, is there – I think defensively when he's here, he's a little erratic. He's a little all over the place. The accuracy of the arm, I know he, arm strength and all that stuff. You mentioned the six tools. I mean, it was jumping off the page. I just think it's refining. Is that the next step, like refining sort of offensively? You know, you ambush in certain parts of the game against certain kind of pitchers on certain pitches. Defensively, right, you make every routine play occasionally, you know, because that moment arrives. You have to make that special play. Is that the next step for Bobby Witt Jr.?
Jeff, he's in that step. He's in the step already. Yeah. This first year, you know, just his talent alone was good enough, but the game was too fast for him. He couldn't slow it down. So he didn't measure out really good with the modern day numbers, you know, with all the analytics. He was behind in a lot of those categories. And then last season, he said, okay, I'll slow the game down now. I'll make the plays I'm supposed to, and the brilliant plays, those will happen naturally because he's a brilliant talent. So his numbers all were great last year. He had 14 outfield or outs above average. It, you know, all those other numbers were fantastic for him, runs saved and all that. And this year he's the same guy. And you put in Garcia, the third baseman, Mikel Garcia playing next to him, nothing gets through. And, you know, this is the best fielding team in the American League so far. They've had the this is the freakish stat I've ever heard this deep into the season. The Royals have only given up one unearned run.
Wow.
One. So that means when your team miscues, you know, usually they pile on the opponents, but no one does because the Royals are so airtight. Now, the next step for Bobby Witt Jr. Is a player. Is, you know, he was 30-30 last year, 50-30, whatever. He's, you know, he stole 49 bases. I mean, the guy, he's done everything. He wants, all he talks about is winning championships next, and I think they're going to provide him with those kind of players to do that, and they've been there before. Same management outside of Dayton Moore, who unfortunately was the fall guy when all that pitching that they had didn't make it. They let him go, but J.J. Piccolo was his man right behind him. They kept him, and he has the blueprint of what it takes to win a world title. Small market teams don't go to back-to-back World Series titles like the Royals did in 14 and 15, and they're heading there again. Yeah, it's because of star players. You got to have the players, the pitching, the bullpen, all that's been changed around. Now, there's still a few holes in this ball club, but so far, everybody's pretty happy with the way they're performing. But Bobby Witt Jr., man, I see an MVP in his future for sure.
Yep.
But the team's got to do well, and that's starting to happen here. We'll just wait and see and hold our breath.
Nice.
Rex, from a distance, it seems that guys like Seth Lugo and Michael Walker, that one of the things they've brought to this team is it just strikes me as a really stable team right now. Right? You look at these guys, and it seems as if the pieces that are there make sense in terms of guys at certain points of their career – got a nice blend of youth and experience. It really does seem as if they've stabilized things.
Absolutely. And that comes with the front office. The higher minds of the front office made some brilliant deals in the offseason. Picked up Lugo, Seth Lugo, a guy from San Diego, you know, middle of the road, middle of the rotation guy. But they picked him because of Will Smith. Okay, it all started with Will Smith, the reliever for the Texas Rangers last year. Three-time World Series champion in three different years for three different teams. Who does that? Nobody. So we hired Will Smith, first hire of the offseason. And he says, him and J.J. Piccolo, the GM for the Royals, got together and they started making a playlist of who they want. Who do we want? We have the resources to go out and get different guys. He knew Seth Lugo. He knew Michael Walker. He calls those guys up and says, guys, we're going to win here. You guys need to be a part of it. You're going to be a big part of that if we can just get you to come sign a contract. they come inside. They started getting bullpen arms, Stratton, Anderson. They went out and traded for the kid from the Boston Red Sox in the back of their bullpen.
Yeah.
Schreiber, sinker. They just scored a run off him just yesterday, the first run he's ever given up all year. So the changes that were made were all made in areas the Royals needed most. Starting pitching and bullpen help. They had some pretty good talented position players behind them, but they went out and got Renfro, a power hitting outfielder. They went out and got Frazier, a guy named Garrett Hampson, who's a nice chip for Matt Quatrero. He could start in center and start at shortstop. He plays infield, outfield, has good speed. I mean, there's the pieces that were added to this team has made it competitive again with an outside shot and the way these guys carry themselves, especially with the world champion Salvador Perez. If they stay healthy, which has been good so far, they're going to be a contending team in the Central. You watch it. And I told our fans that at the beginning of the season, worst to first happens in the modern game more than you think.
Yeah, it helps when you can pitch. Brady Singer's been good. Why?
He finally got in his head that he can't get major league hitters out with just two pitches three times through the order. I've never, in my playing days or my minor league days, I never knew a starting pitcher with only two pitches. Singer got here and he had a sinker-slider combination and it worked well for him his rookie year. The next year worked okay for him. Then hitters start picking up on that. I mean, you only got two pitches to get them out. They're going to sit on one or two of them. You're in trouble. So, as in Brady's words, he sucked. He wasn't that good the last year or so.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, how come? Well, he needs more to offer. Brian Sweeney, brilliant young pitching coach the Royals picked up along with Quatrero and five other coaches. Brand new last year. Okay, you change one coach, that changes chemistry a lot. You get six new coaches in, and last year with all those young rookies and, trying to win, didn't happen. But now, all of a sudden, it's changed. But Brian Sweeney's helping these guys shape their pitches. He brought Singer a new four-seam fastball to go along to raise the eye level to the hitter and still go with that sinker slider and a little split change, a split changeup that can equalize the hitters. Now they're more off balance. And he's low 90s. But the only other thing that separates Singer, too, and this year, was the walk up the Lugo in the rotation, taking pressure off of Brady Singer, because he was the main guy that had the most experience in the rotation last year. It didn't work out. But the pressure is off of him now, and he's shoving.
Yeah,
it's beautiful to see him. He has intestinal fortitude and good mound presence. Those are something that a lot of pitchers don't have. When you have that and you've got pitching and you've got confidence and a defense behind you, you're going to win games. He induced like eight double plays in two starts. I mean, he pitches to contact. This team, all of them pitch to contact. They're not trying to blow guys away because they don't have to. You get outs or outs, especially when you've got an airtight, vacuum-type defense like the Royals. It's going to be a lot of fun this season. And the Blue Jays, they better be sharp. Watch out. They play good at home here. The Royals do, too.
Yep. Rex, I look at Brady Singer last year against right-handed pitchers. They hit like 320. I'm just looking at numbers. They hit 321 off him, which was the fifth highest mark in the majors. I look at him now, and they're 6-for-38, 158 against him with 12 punchies. Which of the pitches has really turned it around for him against right-handed hitters?
The four-seamer. And, a lot of pitchers are a little nervous with their changeup. It's their changeup. A right-handed pitcher goes into a righty. It goes in. They don't like pitches to go into guys, but he's mixing in that pitch there, staying with his sliders away and sinkers. But the four-seam fastball is at 93, 94, up there at the top of the zone. That raises that level. When you say that eye level, the ball gets up here that looks big to the hitter, but he has a hard time getting on top of that ball with his top hand. So he can't square it up. So then here comes the hard two-seamer in, and the soft one. It's basically now north, south, east, and west. When you have that movement against big league hitters and you have some experience and a little bit of mound presence, it goes a long way.
Give me somebody that plays every day that maybe the Jays fans can look out for, pay attention to, that's really good, that you think's a big deal for the Royals.
Oh, man. Well, Salvi's driving this bus. Salvador Perez is 33 years old. He'll be 34 next month. He's playing like he's 23. The most improved player is Salvador Perez. You know why? He's not chasing anymore. He used to swing at everything.
Yeah.
And that has made him extremely dangerous. And we're seeing more walks. Pitchers that are, it's an intentionally unintentional walk. They don't want to throw to him. They're not throwing him anything. And he's not chasing anymore. He's dangerous. He's barreling balls. Salvador Perez might be at the best I've ever seen him, at least the start of the season he's had. Bobby Witt Jr. is a guy you can't take your eye off him on the field anywhere. He's that kind of player. So the fans can watch those two players for sure. They're driving the bus at the top of the order. Vinny Pasquantino can hit. Mm-hmm. He can hit. He got off to a slow start, but this guy's raking now. He's got a 10-game hitting streak. Keep an eye on the Pasquatch. That's his nickname. We call him Pasquatch. Who else about out there? Melendez, MJ Melendez, has some pop from the left side. Man, he hits his homers, and he does all of his damage at home. Hadn't got him to hit on the road or anything, but, man, he's got great numbers at home, and he's got some pop. That kid's a good player. They moved him out from the catching spot last year to be a full-time outfielder, and it's made huge dividends for him.
Now, Rex, they've got all these good young players with the Royals. We talked about what a great story they are. You guys just saw the Orioles. What's the difference? And we know about the Orioles, young guys, and the 30 of them they still have at Norfolk or wherever the hell their AAA affiliate is. What?
Norfolk.
Yeah. What is, to your mind, the separator between the youth the Orioles have and the youth the Royals have? Is it just numbers? Is it sheer numbers with the Orioles in terms of the number of young prospects they have?
That's a good question. I think it is. I mean, yes, they're all talented. Every one of them they're bringing up. Now, Holiday, he's the weak link, and he's supposed to be one of the best of all of them. But he hadn't gotten any hits yet because he's a little insecure. And, you know, he's facing big league pitching for the first time. It happens to all the young guys. But I think, yeah, you know what? They've got a little bit of mix of some guys there. You know, by Rutherford, that guy, the catcher, he seems like a veteran player, and this is only his third year. He seems like a veteran player. He's settled in. Santander, the right fielder, he's a leader. And that guy can hit, and he can play some defense too. Now, they've moved some guys around because of these young bodies, but I think a lot of it's the same. Royals are in a similar situation. They're not quite as deep. You know, they're not quite as deep as the Orioles are in AAA, but they've got some significant talent there too. So, the Royals gave the Orioles everything they could handle. We should have swept them at their house. They had two walk-offs on us. We beat them at once, and then we played them tough this way. Yesterday, talking with Hyde, their new skipper yesterday, he goes, man, we can't wait to get out of town. So we're done with the Birds for the rest of the year. The Royals gave them fits. They're a tough team. There's no question about it, but we'll just see how their pitching holds up.
Rex, last one before we let you go. If you guys stay in this down the road here, is there one thing that you guys need that would make you a better team? You've got the quality starts taken care of with your rotation. You got five guys in your lineup who have 10 or more RBIs. So it looked like you're driving in runs. You're keeping the other team from scoring. Is there one specific part of the team that really needs to be honed in on if you guys are still good here down the stretch?
Kevin, you got to have some fuzz at the back end of your pen, man. You got to have a flamethrower in there. The Royals got nobody who can blow gas, blow cheddar at the end of games. Now, the kid, MacArthur, he's good. They're using him in that situation. It was Will Smith for the first part, but he just don't have enough fuzz to close games. They'll figure it out. He's an adequate pitcher, and he's going to be okay for us. But, you know, Carlos Hernandez is hurt, his shoulder. He's been in the minors for a little bit. He's getting better, though. And they got a left-hander named Jake Brent. So those guys are all 98, both 98 guys. But if there's one thing they need, it's a power reliever and a power arm, and they'll get it when the time comes.
Rex, really good of you to join us, as always, my friend. Should be a fun series. The Royals got it going on. It's going to be a good year for you.
Rex, before we let you go, who is the autograph on that baseball that you got in your hand? Who is that?
Whoa, you know what? I got Phil Niekro. Nuxie's on here.
Wow.
Look at the Phil Niekro. That's awesome. Yeah, so this ball just came from a fan to my house. It wanted me to sign it because I was an ex-Yankee. Not a very good one, by that mind I put that out. But he sent these balls, and he wanted me to sign a ball, and I went and picked it up because it's hard for me to talk without a ball. But, Kevin, the grand game is special.
It is.
Phil Niekro was one of my teammates. I love Nuxie. Oh. He was so classy. That guy made me feel like I was Yogi Berra. He made me feel like I was a star and I wasn't. And so those kind of guys that I got to rub elbows with when I first broke in the big leagues with the Yankees was amazing. Willie Randolph was great. Don Baylor, Ken Griffey Sr. Man, the list goes on. And they did nothing but treat me like I was a guy. They didn't have to do that. I love those guys that broke me in.
That's awesome. Glad I asked. That's tremendous.
Yeah, I think you're underselling yourself, Rex. You were a first-round draft pick.
Yeah.
You're underselling.
Yeah,
here.
You were pretty good.
You were a big deal when you
were.
You were a big deal when you came up. You're underselling yourself.
You had your own room on the road, for sure.
Thank you. But I will tell you, Cal Ripken Jr. would have changed Yankee history had they took him with my pick and put me in the second round.
I know, right? Hey.
Oh, you're the best.
You can't do it. Be well, man.
Oh, man,
Take care.
The best.
See you, Rex.
Thanks, buddy.
Be well. That is the great Rex Hudler. Yeah, people forget that name.
He's still talking.
He was a first round pick.
Yeah, yeah.
He was a terrific football player too. He may have, if I'm not mistaken, he had a shot at going to Notre Dame. He was a really, really good football player. And of course he's not too excited about the Royals. Hey, Salvador Perez, further to his point about Sal Perez, and I know we just have a few minutes left here, but I want to get into this. Okay, he went 0-for-2, had a couple of walks yesterday. His on-base streak is 11 games. He's had 5 walks during that time, all right? He's drawn multiple walks in 2 of his last 4 games. That's something he did just 10 times in his previous 1,411 career games. So what that suggests to me is that lineup is good enough now that Sal Perez can take a walk. Turn it over to the guy behind him.
Yeah, I think he came to the realization he's not good enough to chase and think he can cover all parts of the strike zone. Yeah. Like, the pitching's too good. They throw too hard. Their secondary stuff is, you know, it's like the guy throwing a knife for them, Brady Singer, throws that slider 46% of the time. That's a lot.
That is a lot.
Like, you don't throw his fastball a ton, right? So you got to really hone in and swing it something you can do damage on. And I think he's bought into that. And, you know, you want to have success. You want to hit 333 with 6 big ones and 22 RBIs.
You know what, Kevin?
You do that, it's all about what you swing at. So yeah. Maybe some guys in the right Jays division. Lineup can watch him hit.
They're in the right division.
Yeah. I mean, they got a chance to have some hiccups, you know, and then it just takes a couple arms at the back end to – you need hard throwers, which is sort of, you know, what the Jays have now. Kansas City gets that with the starting rotation. The park they play in, you know, it's a pitcher's friendly park. Ball don't fly there all the time, so you can make up for some youth in your rotation. Mm-hmm. They continue to pitch well. They got some, you know, some shutdown at the back end. Maybe.
Yeah, they are fun to watch though. They I had just, you know, I get to sing the praises now. Bobby Witt Jr. will probably go for 30 in the series. Well, that would be something, wouldn't it?
Well,
a lot of extra inning games there. But yeah, it should be fun. Should be fun.
Yeah, I think this is what this should tell the Jays something. They got to hit more. Like the three dudes for the Royals are off to a good start. Their team's off to a good start, and sort of their pitching is following. Right? I don't think it's backwards. It's sort of you do your thing, we'll do our thing. We'll meet in the middle.
Yeah, I don't see that happening. I'm the one that going into last week. This weekend said at least I'm starting to see on the field some of the stuff everybody's been talking about since spring training. I'm starting to see that. I'm starting to see that a little bit, but there's always going to be an imbalance with the Blue Jays. The pitching's always going to be way, way up here, and the hitting's always going to be down here. And I don't think there's going to be any meeting in the middle, but hey, you know,
I can't cross my fingers, but let's cross them.
Why
let's
can't
try.
You cross your fingers?
I don't know. I can force it over there and do it.
What? That's weird.
I'm weird.
Well, no, you know what it is. You played so much baseball, those things have probably been hit by balls.
Probably.
And bats and,
yeah.
Even though you didn't take a day off because of injury, there could be some wear and tear on those fingers.
Hmm.
7:40 will be the first pitch tonight. From Kansas City. We'll be doing Blue Jays talk following the game.
Yeah, hopefully they get 40 hits,
winning,
score 35
winning edition
runs.
Of Blue Jays talk. Enjoy the baseball. We'll chat tomorrow.